Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking to Dr. Pamela Weibel, who has a website entitled idealmedicalcare.org. She has a vision for how medical care should be because there are some problems with the way medical education is being conducted these days, doctor training, and ultimately the way that medicine is structured. Her website looks to alternatives, and you've written a couple of books as well. So tell us about your books, Dr. Weibel.
Well, the first book I wrote is called Pet Goats and Pap Smears, which is kind of a celebration of the joy of being a family doctor. It's all sorts of, it's like chicken soup for the soul for doctors and patients and nurses. And it's, you know, 1 to 3 page lighthearted stories of healing with cartoons, very funny. And it's kind of what it feels like to follow me around for the day is what that book is all about. So that is a book that celebrates the ideal medical care movement. And just to give a little background on what that's about is that I was suicidal myself back in 2004, mostly because I was so disgusted with the types of jobs I was being offered. They just wanted me to be a factory worker.
When was this? Was this after your residency or during residency training?
No, this is after residency. Okay. I had been out of residency for like about 10 years or so. I had had maybe 6 jobs in 10 years just looking around for that ideal job that I could stay at for a lifetime. And I realized that all these high overhead big box clinics really just wanted me for revenue generation and could care less about my health or the health of their patients as long as they didn't get sued, you know. Yeah. And so it was just, you know, greed at its worst. And I just was so ethically misaligned with any of these employers, I couldn't stay there. And so I went through several jobs and finally got to the point where I realized that, wow, there's really nothing out there. Unless I do this myself, there is no way to find a salary job in which I feel that I can be a true healer and really meet my patients on an emotional, spiritual, and physical level, which is what I had always imagined that I would do as a neighborhood family doc. And so what helped me with these deep, dark thoughts of total despair was that I decided to go into the community and invite them to design their ideal clinic, because I certainly didn't know how to do it. They never trained me in medical school beyond these multiple choice questions. They didn't help us understand, well, how do you actually deliver medical care? I mean, I can pass multiple choice question tests. I can pass my boards, but how do you actually do this for people? And so I just had this really cool idea of inviting the community to design their own clinic, make it truly patient-centered, put them in charge. And they gave me 100 pages of written testimony. I asked them, you know, like, tell me your wildest dreams, you know, like the most off-the-wall ideas you have. If you could have anything in an ideal clinic, what would it be? And I was able to, I mean, it's like kind of a Make-A-Wish Foundation sort of thing, like I'll do whatever you want, right? Well, they weren't asking for more technology and MRI on every corner. They wanted eye contact. They wanted me to open my heart to them. They wanted the truth. They wanted longer appointments. They didn't want to be rushed. I mean, they wanted everything that I wanted. So I was able to integrate 90% of their feedback and open this community-designed ideal clinic 1 month later with no outside funding. Mm. And I'm not rich.
Okay,
but, so it's really awesome.
That is great, and you know, I have my own medical clinic. I'm a physician in private practice too. I don't work for an institution or hospital, larger entity. But it's tough because the pressures are even greater for doctors to sign up to work for hospitals or to work for HMOs or managed care organizations, because the overhead of doing medicine is so high. You know, the malpractice, the computers, the billing systems, it really creates an impetus for many doctors to give up private practice and end up working for a big institution. So how do you push back against that trend? Because it's, you know, the statistics is that I think 50 years ago, the majority of doctors, maybe 2/3 of doctors, were in private practice. You go to the doctor's office, they hung out a shingle, you know, in the community, and they would practice. And nowadays, it's no, you go into a clinic and there's a multi-specialty practice, and you might see one doctor one day, another doctor another day, and they're sort of interchangeable cogs in the system.
Well, the big problem today is that we're trying to deliver primary care with a tertiary care delivery model, which is totally unsustainable. And to explain this in normal terminology to, like, your listeners, you know, if you need a lung transplant, you know, that's tertiary care. You do need to go to a big hospital that has a helipad and five stories mm-hmm. and lungs on ice, and you've got, you know, a huge team of people and a million protocols and all these computer systems. Yeah, you do need all that, right, safeguards for that sort of catastrophic situation. But for an ingrown toenail, you shouldn't be using the same coding book and billing software and a five-story hospital with helipad and team that you're using for a lung transplant. And they have literally taken primary care, which should be just what you do with your doctor in your neighborhood down the street, and they've turned it into a complicated mess of too many cooks in the kitchen. And so we need to get back to, you know, if you think about it, when you have an ingrown toenail, who do you really need? You need your doctor and a pair of scissors and the patient. You know, that's really what you need.
It's not high tech.
Numbing medicine.
Yeah.
It's not high tech, and you shouldn't have to code and tell everyone on Earth, you know, what exactly you did and how long it took.
Right.
It's nobody else's business, and right. you should be able to pay for it yourself because it should be affordable. You
right.
know what I mean? And so lung transplant, yeah, I mean, just like with car insurance, you don't use it for every time you fill up your car. You don't have to get prior authorization and call Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield and ask their permission, right? I mean, people should be able to do simple things with their doctors in their neighborhoods without permission for an affordable price. And if you need a lung transplant, that's what you need insurance for. You know what I mean?
Right.
So how I overcome all these obstacles in my clinic, I do still take insurance, but I created my own EMR off of electronic medical record, you know, with, I'm not an tech person either, I just use regular software. I didn't spend like $50,000 on an electronic medical record system that's created by somebody who's not a doctor, who has no idea what I'm doing. So I simplify everything I can like that, and I can still take insurance, and I bill through an online clearinghouse, and I don't take all insurance. I mean, there's some insurance companies that are highly abusive. And so, you know, just to avoid a few of those insurance companies that are really nightmares, it makes your life so much better, because 99% of your heartache is probably coming from 1 or 2% of the things that you're doing.
Right.
Or 1 or 2% of the patients who are disrespecting you or that sort of thing, you know?
Right.
So.
What about our pattern of medical education? Because you have outreach to a lot of medical students, and there seems to be a growing movement of dissent among medical students who are using you as kind of a role model, where they're questioning the educational path that's set out for them. Because these days you go to pre-med, you know, that's a lot of work, that's college, you're immersed in science, then you go to med school, that's 4 years, but that's not enough. You then need to go for, at minimum, a 3-year residency, and maybe then another 4, 5, or 6-year fellowship, where it's really like almost like a medieval guild. You have to be, you know, sort of apprentice, journeyman, and then finally you get your mastery, and you become whatever, a plastic surgeon, or you become an ear, nose, and throat doctor. And some young people who just want to get out there and treat patients, especially in primary care, say, hey, why do we have to jump through all these hoops? And especially if you want to do the kind of medicine that I do, which is nutritionally oriented medicine, that they're not going to teach you in a residency program anyway.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's just, we have such an antiquated medical education model that literally holds us hostage into this pharma-heavy, insurance-heavy infrastructure that does not ultimately serve the needs of the patients. And the reason why I know this is I've done town hall meetings all across the country now, helping other doctors open their clinics designed by their patients and their communities, and I know what the average American really wants out of healthcare, and it's not how we're being trained in residency. There is no reason I should have had to do a month or two in the NICU, the newborn intensive care unit, as somebody who's going to ultimately practice outpatient family medicine and not see too many children. There is absolutely no reason for that. Why we are being made to follow a algorithm and a, you know, an educational program that's a one-size-fits-all for, you know, almost like a tertiary care style, heavy pharma sort of indoctrination, it just doesn't make any sense. It's not what patients want, and it's not what most family docs and primary care people want to do. They want to help their community be healthy and teach people lifestyle and nutrition and stress reduction, and we don't learn any of that in medical school. We just learn to put them on high blood pressure medicine that they're going to have to stay on forever. You know?
I, I, w- I was struck by the there's a video by one of your contributors who's a med student, or perhaps she's a resident. Yeah, I think she's a resident. She graduated from med school. And she talks about creating an alternative residency, which is sort of a little bit what I did myself. You know, I had the conventional residency, but then I had to go hither and thither and yon to put together the ideal medical program that would prepare me for practice. And it wasn't all available through a hospital teaching system. So do you think that that's a movement that's going to get legs, is that people are going to be more creative about sort of creating a menu, personalizing their menu of experiences so that when they get to be a doctor, they don't just have the conventional indoctrination?
Yeah, I do think that's going to be what needs to happen, because these medical students are not going to keep paying $50,000 a year for this education that's so highly abusive and is not a match, you know, for what they ultimately are going to do with patients. And we let nurse practitioners and PAs out and practices, primary care providers, and you know, they're out there with much less education. We could do the same thing and have our education really match the needs of what the population is demanding from us, which is not like lots of drugs and lots of high-risk interventions, but they want to know how they can be healthy, you know, a wellness-driven, not a, you know, chronic disease management system, which is kind of how we're trained now, how to keep people on lots of drugs and keep monitoring their lab tests and not giving them any hope.
And above all, avoid malpractice. You know, as long as they're on the correct drugs, even if they die, it's okay. They died with their
proper
medication.
Yeah, we need to revamp the entire thing. I mean, just like I did with an ideal medical clinic, why not have medical students design their ideal medical school? You don't have to do everything they say, but I bet they'd have a heck of a lot better ideas than the administrators have on how to set these schools up.
Yeah, they really do need reform.
And the same thing with residencies. You know, what would be an ideal residency? It's certainly not saying that you're working 80 hours or less a week and then sneaking you in the hospital for 120. I mean, there's so much deception and abuse going on. This has to be called out, and I really commend you for having me on here because the people need to know about this. I mean, the average person needs to understand who is controlling the other part of, you know, your ventilator. You know, who's on the other end of your ventilator? Is this person, have they had sleep in the last few days? Have they been bullied? Are they thinking clearly? Are they depressed? Do they have PTSD? I think we all need our healers to be in good shape, right?
Absolutely. That's a wonderful, empowering message. So what's today's intelligent medicine call to action? There are several ways in which health professionals and also the lay public can interact with you. First, go to your website, of course. It's idealmedicalcare.org and learn about all the various activities you're involved in. You also have physician retreats for health professionals. What's that about?
Oh, yeah. I have retreats twice a year in Oregon. Physicians come from all over the U.S., Canada, and sometimes elsewhere, and they join us for a live 4 to 5 day event where they can finally heal from the trauma of their training and realize that they don't have to suffer anymore, and there is a whole other way to practice medicine. And so we help each other design our ideal clinics and go back and open these clinics in our communities so we can be real doctors and not wounded for the rest of our lives. And then I encourage patients to interact with their physicians honestly as human beings. And if you're not receiving the care you need from a physician, like, don't be scared to change physicians. Find somebody that you have better chemistry with. And if you're only getting 5, 10, 15-minute appointments at these big box clinics, you can always leave and go into an independent practice with a doctor, you know, like one of us, who will spend 30 to 60 minutes with you and really help you with your medical problems. So I think we're in an era of empowerment all the way around. You know, medical students are becoming empowered to stand up to their medical schools. Physicians are becoming empowered to break free of these highly abusive systems. And every physician that breaks free, it's kind of like a micro strike. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're striking against and boycotting some of these third parties. And then patients, it all comes down to where you put your dollars. You know, who do you want to support? And why not go to a doctor that you really love?
Well,
instead of supporting a system that's quite sick.
we need a grassroots revolution in healthcare, and it's probably not going to come from top down, from Health and Human Services. It's probably going to come from consumer demand and a grassroots awareness.
An outrage.
Yeah, an outrage, uh-huh. Ultimately, like kind of a mini revolution in the way that we care for people. Hey, I want to...
And the way that we funnel our dollars, you know, we put all our dollars into a whole other system, and we kind of like... starve the machine that's so highly mm-hmm. abusive to everyone.
Vote with our consumer dollars. Okay.
Yeah.
Dr. Pamela Weibel, congratulations, and you know, I really commend you for your efforts on behalf of ideal medical care. That's really what we're all striving for, and you're making a very, very important contribution to awareness of what's wrong with the system and how to remediate it. So thanks very much. The website again, idealmedicalcare.org. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Yeah, have a great day. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.